I hope that, like, once we can prove that, yes, this works and brings a lot of benefits, then we could kind of coach the whole organization.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Currently, many pharma are attempting to do digital transformations. A lot of these are driven from the top, and the strategy may be good, but they're failing to get buy-in from the entire organization. Now there's a company that uses AI to help drive change management. Today I'm with Dima Sorotkin, who's the founder of Pandatron, which is an AI-powered change management tool for companies attempting to drive change. Thank you for coming on the show today, Dima. It's good to have you here. Shall we start with a little bit about your background and what you were doing and what actually led you to found Pandatron?
Yeah, so my background and sort of what led me to the company actually started from an NGO called ISEC. It's a student-run nonprofit that is focused on developing leadership in young people. And because it is student-run, the turnover is really high. So they have to train people quite a lot. And because of that, I got more in touch with training. And I also got in touch with what they call like leadership development seminars, although in reality, they are more personal development seminars. Okay. And I quickly realized that there's a lot of potential there, that, you know, we tend to invest in technology quite a bit, but not a lot in people. Yeah. And also, if we look at education, it's a lot of kind of focused on skills. But there, it was more focused on self-awareness and, you know, what do you actually want, what drives you in life, and questions like that. Mm-hmm. So that has been, yeah, very, very helpful for me to gain that insight of like, okay, what if we apply that in other areas? Mm-hmm. And initially, so a lot of my experience actually is startups. So I previously founded another company that I sold, and with this company as well, kind of getting that insight of like, okay, how can we invest more in people? Mm-hmm. I initially started a company that was doing a corporate training marketplace. So kind of like Airbnb for corporate training. We quickly realized that, yeah, the problem is not finding training, but finding good training. Mm-hmm. So we pivoted towards measuring the effectiveness of corporate training. And then once we saw that, you know, most of the training is actually quite good. The problem is the learning transfer. Like, do people actually stick with it? We then pivoted towards the tool that we're currently developing. And then over time, the executives came to us and they were like, can you actually apply it also in change management? Because that's where we have like $1 billion budgets. Yeah. But sort of the principle is similar. And besides that, I've worked a little bit in management consulting, with some ex-Accenture people, worked in training, so that helped me realize things on that front. And currently I'm doing a PhD part-time in management and organization.
Oh, so. Interesting. Yeah. So tell me about Pandatron and what does it actually do with change management?
So your listeners might have heard of executive coaching, business coaching. Sometimes people confuse it with mentoring. I would say the main difference is that in mentoring, you know, you come to me and you're like, hey, I have a challenge. What should I do? And then you give me an advice. And here it's more like I would ask you a set of questions as a coach. And I would be like, hey, you know, what is actually the challenge? Let's try to kind of get to the core of it. And then what are the options you have to, you know, resolve it? And, you know, what could be the goal that you could set for yourself until the next week to kind of get closer to it? Yeah. So coaching is a very powerful methodology. And when people are good at it, like executive coaches can easily charge, you know, $500 per hour I guess like the more standard price for like business coaching would be maybe closer to like 250, which is less, but still pretty high. Mm-hmm. What we do is that we use AI attempting to automate coaching. So essentially we're saying, can we have a chatbot that coaches people instead of a human coach? And the outcomes of that are, first of all, you can scale it to hundreds or thousands of people, mm-hmm. right? Because it is software. And theoretically, you know, we could charge $1 per month per person at like big enough scale and still make money, which is not true for, you know, human coaching. Mm-hmm. And then the other benefit that we discovered is that when we coach hundreds of people at the same time, we start seeing patterns of what they're dealing with. So we can then anonymize that data, look at those patterns, and present the insights to the management and say, hey, you know, we can clearly see that there's certain systemic issues here. That yes, your people are trying to address the challenges, but there's also some things that you need to address yourself from the top down to kind of address this more systemic issues. Yeah.
So it's like a chatbot way that's really like coaching, like a business coach. So what kind of change management challenges clients are bringing to your tool?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Like what's the bridge? Like why coaching and change management? So what we've seen is that if we look at like what type of change management programs are there, quite often it's digital transformation, agile transformation, innovation culture, maybe sales excellence programs. And even in the cases with digital transformation, where it is just about implementing new software, seemingly, when you ask people, what is the biggest challenge? Like why are this program seemingly not succeeding, right? Like the quote mm-hmm. you gave from McKinsey in the beginning.
Yeah.
They would often tell you that it is because of the people. Namely, that it's hard to change behavior, culture, and mindset. Like I talked to Volvo a couple of months ago, and they told me, look, we want to be Tesla in 10 years. The car should be a computer, and you know it's going to be all electric. But the challenge is we have, you know, I don't remember how many employees, but let's say 100,000 employees that have all worked on combustion engines for the past 30 years. And they don't want to change that easily. They've already accumulated a certain expertise, and they have a certain, you know, power and status position in the organization. So that's one very practical example. And so coaching is, you know, it's focused on helping you change behavior, helping you question what's kind of underlying those challenges that you have, questioning the beliefs. It doesn't really tell people like, hey, you know, you must do this. But it's more like, hey, you know, let's discover what's underlying this and let's try, you know, and build an experiment and do something small until next week and then see how it progresses.
There's so many different facets to change management. So there's, you know, all the different people challenges like mindset and behavior change and so on. But then there's also the management challenges like, you know, lack of investment and insufficient backing of the changes. Could you speak to how Pandatron addresses both of those areas, you know, so the people and then the management?
I would say that we're currently more focused on the people side of things for sure. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the and on the people side, yeah, maybe to double click on that. So if we think of culture, we think of it as a kind of accumulation of behavior from many, many employees. Yeah. And so in order to change the culture, you essentially need to change behavior. With behavior, very simplistically, the way we think about it is, on one hand, there's, you know, the mindset of people, like, are they open to the potential of failure on the experiment, right?
Yeah.
And on the other hand, there's also building habits. So some things you just, you know, accumulate over time. And it's just something that, happens over time, and you need to actually work on it. And it's difficult to kind of change in an instant. And so coaching can address both of those. On one hand, helping people to understand like where are they coming from. So if they are afraid of that failure, why is that? Is that because, you know, there's been instances in the past where they've been punished for it? Is it like, what evidence do they have? And, you know, what are the potential sort of benefits that they might be not seeing if their assumptions are not correct? Like if they actually try to experiment and they succeed, what could be the upside, right? And it could be one outcome could be, like you asked about the management, one outcome could be that we discover actually that the incentives are so misaligned that it's just really not, you know, not a good idea for employees to experiment and to innovate, where they are really, you know, the punishment is 10 times greater than the reward for it. So it's like, who in their sane mind would do it? So then that's the part where we would collect that information, that insight, and bring that to the management and say, hey, you know, this is something that you should actually pay attention to. That yes, like your people will try to be, you know, to do what they can, but there are certain limitations. And then on the management side, I think our vision is that currently we're mostly working with middle management when we come into organizations, because that's where most companies want to start, you know, the pilot or kind of like the initial engagement. And also like the top management often believes that, you know, we don't need coaching. Like, why, you know, we are the top management. We know everything. So from that perspective, it is challenging, but I hope that like once we can prove that, yes, this works and brings a lot of benefits, that they would also get involved, and then we could kind of coach the whole organization and see different perspectives. And at that point, I think we could also, you know, nudge the management in that same direction.
So what kind of companies are you working with currently?
It's mostly corporations. So it seems to be that the larger the company, the greater the, you know, change management needs, because the more people they have, and, you know, the more challenging it is to turn the ship. And then, so it tends to be like 20,000 people plus, sometimes 5,000 people plus. And then the industry wise, we've really seen kind of companies across industries, pharma not as heavily yet, but like manufacturing, logistics, old technology companies.
We have manufacturing and logistics within pharma as well, of course.
For sure.
So exactly. There is probably quite a lot that needs to be done. Could you talk about one or two case studies from clients of what kind of change management challenges they were facing and what they'd tried before you came along, and then what changed when you brought Pandatron in?
So, sure. I mean, one example would be safety change management program was one like forestry company, and what's it called? Forestry paper, right? Manufacturing company in the Nordics. I think there are around 20,000 people, and they essentially just wanted to improve their safety standards, what they're working on. The challenge was to engage the middle management to then ensure that that strategy cascades further. Because before that, the main kind of, you know, communication channel they had is that, you know, they would send them for a training. So they would assume that these people know what they're, you know, what they're supposed to do. And they would try to send emails and things like that. But they kind of lacked a direct influence and the implementation piece there. And before that, the training, I think training and communication are basically the two main tools that most companies use. Like, I haven't seen a lot of creativity there. I mean, there might be like, they might call it a workshop or, but at the end of the day, it's still kind of this basic tools.
You would have had a lot of natural language processing, I assume, in your tool. Did you also work with business coaches when developing how it interacts with people?
We still do. We still do. So I think like there's kind of like a couple of ways to build a chatbot. One way is that you just like dump a lot of data into it and that you hope that it starts doing what you need. That is showing promise for like just generic kind of like, let's see if it starts making sense.
Yeah.
So if some people might have heard of GPT-3 from OpenAI.
Yes,
so that's
yes.
more or less what they do.
Yeah.
But it is, I would claim that it's difficult for like very specific purposes where there's actually like interconnections between different kind of parts of the conversation. And like in coaching, there's a certain structure. Like it's not that you just kind of randomly spit out questions, but there's a logic to them. And there are a number of frameworks that you would use. So what we do instead is that we have coaches, people with therapy background, psychology background, designing content.
Mm-hmm.
And then the role of AI is twofold. On one hand, it would be to choose the right exercise for the right person at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So if the person is like, hey, I'm overwhelmed, we could be like, is that because, you know, you're struggling with managing your time?
Yeah.
And would that mean that like getting more clarity on your priorities would help, right? And then on the other side, it's empathy. So what we notice is that even if there's like a perfect interactive diary that helps people to reflect and actually is useful, often they're missing that component of being heard. And it can be small things like if we would ask, hey, how did you do with your goals since last week, since it's very goal oriented.
Yeah.
And they would say, actually, you know, horrible, almost got fired. Then the bot could say, I'm sorry to hear that, you know, having a hard time at your job.
Yeah.
So
how did you train, what data did you use and how did you train that data to do this?
I did not believe that chatbots would work, personally.
Yeah.
So we started with human coaches doing coaching via text because I was like, well, at least if there's a human coach and they do it via chat, they hopefully can handle more people because it's less like emotionally taxing. And we were estimating that we probably got up to a point where one coach could handle like up to 50 people,
mm-hmm.
Which was already like, you know, big progress in comparison to like traditional approaches. Over time, we noticed that one company was doing something with coaching chatbots, and that kind of inspired us. And we're like, maybe we could, you know, we could try that too.
Yeah.
And we implemented like a hybrid approach, where part of like half of the sessions were with a human coach via chat, and then half of the sessions were was the bot. And we saw that worked actually quite well. And furthermore, the clients came back to us and they were like, hey, so like this chatbot part actually seems to work. Like, can you cut out the human part? How much cheaper would it be if you do that? And we were like, well, maybe like 100 times cheaper. So to answer your question, we essentially got the data from those like early days.
I was going to say, did you use the text data? Okay, very interesting.
Yeah. And then now, you know, we continue generating it, of course, through like the client engagements. So that's basically the answer. And then we also use some like ready GPT-3 models currently, ready like NLP models. So currently, mm-hmm. For example, we are starting to implement GPT-3 for like rephrasing. So those ones we don't need to train, right? Because they're already like made by someone. So.
Yeah. And so the platform itself, how do you actually start interacting with it? And say someone comes to you, how does the process of onboarding work and how quick can they get started?
We have a first meeting with the client where they explain what their goals are on the level of behavior, you know, culture, data they want to collect.
Yeah.
And we might do some slight customizations. Like leadership challenges, time management challenges, conflict resolution, issues, they are quite uniform across companies.
Yeah.
But you do have, different contexts. Like for one company, it can be SAP HANA is for software implementation. And for someone else, it might be like a reorganization of the department. And so it helps to kind of like outline that in the introduction that, hey, you know, as part of this SAP HANA S4 program, et cetera, et cetera. So we do that. Then we book a kickoff with the employees. Usually it's just half an hour. We explain to them what coaching is as well, because not many people have even heard of it. Then we introduce AI coaching and say, hey, you know, there's some similarities, some differences. I think the biggest difference is that AI coaching, people don't really feel judged as much because there's a bot. So they know that, you know, there's no one really, like they can write whatever and it's not going to judge them. And then in the kickoff, they book a meeting with the bot in the calendar. So essentially it's like some people know Calendly and similar kind of calendar tools. So this is similar, except for it books a recurring meeting. And we actually had to build our own. Apparently they're like, we weren't able to find many that would do that on the market where, you know, they would book like a, you know, Thursday, 10 a.m. And it would book a recurring meeting for the next, you know, three months or a year, that every Thursday, 10 a.m., the bot will reach out to them. And we integrate with Teams or Slack. So that's also like a big benefit for corporations that they don't want to install anything. Because that's going to be a separate change management problem. And then the bot just reaches out to people mostly, you know, most commonly in Teams at that point in time. And they have an actual discussion, which lasts like half an hour, where it helps them to clarify what's going on, you know, how they feel, what the priorities are, and then set a goal for next week, right? Like trying to help them come up with a creative solution to their current challenges. And then they can also sign up for like 5-minute daily check-ins, check-outs.
Okay.
So those are just like to help them reflect on the day ahead, or maybe do a gratefulness exercise, or reflect, you know, what they could do better next time. So these are just like small snippets. Also, like helps build habits because those might be something
you
do on a daily basis. So we call those like nano sessions.
Have you done any studies of the impact of the AI coaching versus the human coaching?
So versus the human coaching, so we've done studies where we would study kind of like a control group, and then we would do the AI coaching, and we could see like clearly significant results, where the control group, there was basically no difference. And the group that went through micro coaching, we could see the impact on a number of metrics that were important to the client.
Mm-hmm.
With human versus AI, that's actually interesting because there was a study just a couple of months ago that came out that did compare human coaches and AI coaches. It was like a 10-month intervention. And I was actually surprised by the results because what they found out was that outperformed both human coach and AI coach outperformed the control group.
Of course,
But what's remarkable was that they were equally effective according to this paper. I'm happy to send it to you later, and you can include it in the show notes if the listeners are interested to check it out. And it's, you know, quite a long program as well. Of course, like it's just one paper, and I don't know, like, how did they pick the human coaches, for example, right? Like you could always claim, well, they were just not good, right? Or something. But it's still, I think it's a very interesting indicator. And I think like once we have a few of such papers, you could really claim that, hey, you know, over time, this probably would even be better.
It will learn.
Because it keeps them improving. And I don't know if we can beat like the top coaches. Probably not. Partly because of like a relationship that is being built, right? That the top coaches can sort of, it's almost like in therapy, the relationship is part of the, you know, part of it. Versus here, it's more like an interactive diary. So it's just like a completely you know, different approach.
Different approach, yeah.
And a relationship can be more powerful. Like, I could see that. And also, like, the robot cannot hug you. Like, it can simulate understanding. And like, currently we only do text. In the future, I guess you could do voice. And I guess you could even do some sort of like, you know, avatar video type things. But it's probably still not the same in terms of like the quality of that empathy.
Yeah.
Like, I could imagine. Right. Well, and then
yeah, that could be improved though, couldn't it? I expect
sure,
over time,
sure.
You know,
it depends what timelines you're looking for.
Yeah,
right? Of course,
yeah.
If it's like 100 years, then it's really hard to predict anything anymore. Yeah.
Because there is that example of Bank of America where they got rid of 50% of their customer service staff and replaced with a digital human. And they found that the customer ratings actually improved dramatically with the digital human compared with the humans. And I can see that would possibly also be because the digital human can remember every conversation, every detail, whereas the humans, they write call notes from the last call, but don't say, you know, was rushing to grandson's play or something. So the digital human will have that in their memory bank. And so the next time they speak to that person, they will remember those kind of little details. So I can imagine, and they have empathy, you know, that digital human has empathy as well. So they can detect tone of voice. So I can imagine over time, yours actually could equal or outperform humans on that side as well from learning.
Yeah. I haven't heard about that case study. That's actually quite interesting. Because I know that, like talking about customer service, I know that like they basically gave bad reputation to chatbots.
Yeah.
And like my...
Oh,
my
yes. The traditional non-AI chatbots are so frustrating. Yeah. Yeah.
And I would say that the coaching is actually the easiest use case for chatbots because you can make mistakes and not be noticed because because your main tool is reflection. Like, you don't give people prescriptive actions.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really give, like, sometimes you might, but you don't really, right? Like, for example, if people are like struggling with prioritization, one of the easiest tools you can give them is Eisenhower metrics, and then you would be like, okay, what are the tasks that are, you know, urgent but not important?
Yeah.
And they would list the tasks, and you would say, well, it's generally a recommendation to delegate those because they're not important, and you might focus on the important ones instead. So you are giving an advice there, but it's still very much based on kind of their tasks and it's, you know, so quite often you can just like ask them a question, right? And even if it's not 100% relevant, it's still like what one thing is to say to someone like, hey, you have to work harder. And they would be like, what do you know about me? Like, maybe I need to work smarter, you know? On the other hand, you could ask them, you know, what would you say you need to do to be more effective at your work?
Yeah.
And it's like very unlikely that someone would be like, hey, this question is not relevant for me. Because, you know, most of us do want it.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny. I remember back in the 90s, Eliza. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, which was probably one of the early versions of this, but it was quite interesting interacting with Eliza. So what about the costs? You know, what are the kind of costs compared with a human coach?
It really depends on the scale. So like we're currently considering one case with a client where there's like 240,000 users. And I think you know, there we could easily sell it for like $1 per person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Per month. And that's not even per hour. Like, it's per month. So there's like at least
sessions.
Four like big sessions. And then they can also do those like 5-minute check-ins, check-outs on a daily basis. So it can be like, you know, up to like 2 to 4 hours of kind of coaching time.
Yeah.
And then, currently, when we are talking with you know, clients, just to give you an idea, if it's, you know, around 1,000 people, then it can be like around $15 per month per person. And then, you know, if it's more people, then it's cheaper. If it's less people, then it's more expensive. For us as a company right now, the big priority is to prove that we can actually make it work at scale.
Yeah.
So therefore, we are kind of like heavily incentivizing that scale. And yeah. Also the dream in general is to kind of make it as accessible as possible.
Yeah.
So it's just like if we have a case with like 50 people, it's hard to sell it for a dollar because it's just like, yeah, it wouldn't make any financial sense for us.
Yeah.
Because we would still have to like manage the project. And,
you know, so what would be the smallest size of people, companies that you would look at?
So in terms of like project size, I think around 50 is where we say smallest. That, yeah, at least in terms of the data collected,
yeah,
that it kind of becomes more.
Yes, that makes sense. It's private. To do with the data as well and learning. Yes.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Because if it is 10 people, it is fairly easy to say who said what.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at least we would prefer to have, you know, like 50 people from the same department.
Yeah.
And ideally we would love to get, you know, more projects closer to like 500, something like that.
Yeah.
So that's where it really starts kind of getting all the benefits there. And then in terms of the companies, I mean, we have worked with some like scale-ups, startups that are like 500 people. So I think that's been like the minimum in terms of like company sizes.
Size, yeah.
But usually it's more like 5,000 plus, 20,000 plus.
Okay.
Like in that
okay,
range.
That's good to know. Yeah. It sounds like in the coming years you're going to be not only doing change management, but really giving business coaching a run for its money.
It would be great to get to that stage. I think currently the challenge is that it seems like there's kind of like no drive to really improve. So you need to like really have a lot of evidence to come in and be like, hey, let's replace this.
Yeah.
So currently it seems like it's mostly under HR and, you know, and they have their established processes and they're like, oh, like why would we improve? Versus in change management, it feels like, you know, there's billion dollar projects.
Yeah.
And
they need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So
they feel more of a, yeah.
They feel the pain more.
Pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But well, long term, I see it as like a general company management tool almost.
Mm.
Like in a sense that like, and why I say that, because through the data collection that you get on like, you know, currently it's a monthly basis because the quantities are not huge. Potentially could even be weekly basis where you get kind of an update on what's culturally going on in the company. And it would allow you to kind of, you know, nudge people in the right direction, but at the same time, not to be kind of oppressive and overwhelming where they don't want to do something. And at the same time, help them be more productive and you know, and do that at scale and at like very little price in comparison to like regular programs that are trainings, even not coaching, even if you compare it with training, it's still a lot more important.
I like the fact that it does that for the individuals, but also the fact that you can then take that data, the collective data for the company, and start to create these metrics for management to see some of the endemic challenges that they've got that they need to address as well. So it's nice that you've got kind of both sides.
And the beauty of it is that it's qualitative data.
Mm.
That it's not just like, because I think most of the surveys,
numbers,
you're like, our culture
50%
is
3.7,
you know, and you're like, okay, what is 3.7? Like,
and
very few people actually kind of go in depth to explain themselves. Versus as part of coaching, it's a very integral part of it to try to get to the core of the challenge.
Yeah.
And so there we really start understanding like what's stopping them essentially.
Yeah.
Currently we still use like experts to provide those kind of like reports because the quantities are relatively small.
Yeah.
Once we grow, that would also for sure become the challenge of like, okay, we would have to again use AI to kind of aggregate those.
Summarize, yeah.
But still the challenge usually is not building that, it's getting the data,
or
getting that quality data. So yeah, I do feel quite confident that, you know, it should be possible to aggregate that even like even automatically.
When did you found the company? What year? How old are you as a company?
The company, like officially, it's I think 6 years old. But then that includes those like pivots and iterations.
Yeah.
Where, you know, initially we were kind of like a corporate training marketplace. We built that. We realized, oh, like the clients don't know how to choose between this hundreds of service providers.
Yeah.
Then we were like, okay, then the question is how to find good training, pivoted towards measuring, figured out, oh, training is actually quite good already in most instances, like at least the ones we measured, the quality was, very good. So this product itself, I think, is more than 2 years old, maybe closing in on three.
So very young.
Quite young. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Even 6 years is young to achieve what you've achieved, but just 2 to 3 is amazing. So congratulations. That's really impressive. And there's so many other, eventually there's so many other different things that you could use this kind of thing for. So I think that, this is just the beginning.
Very interesting. That's true. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. If there's anyone listening who wants to find out more and look at putting Pandatron into your company, if you go to Pandatron, PANDATRON.AI, you will find out a lot more and you can reach out to Dima and his team and see how it can help you. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And I really appreciate your time and telling us about your tools. Amazing.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.